He's one of Britain's most successful entrepreneurs, founder of the Japanese-style restaurant chain Yo Sushi, Simon Woodruff. But success hasn't always come easy. He suffered from depression and setbacks in business, and now 62 years old, he feels he's proud of what he's achieved, and he joins me now. Good morning to you, Simon.
Good morning.
You have every right to feel proud of what you've achieved. Let's start, first of
proud
all,
and get it. Proud and relieved.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah, of course, we've also seen you on Dragon's Den, and you've got a bit of a media profile as well now, so people will know your story increasingly, which brings attention to it. But just get this on the table straight away, how you built your success.
Simon Woodruff left school with just three O-levels and spent years working in the music business before launching Yo Sushi, a Japanese-style restaurant chain which made him millions. Now Gavin must convince the other dragons to come up with the investment he needs, £100,000.
I'll have a go at talking to you. This is a very, very high-risk business, isn't it?
I don't think so.
I know, because I spent quite a bit of the 80s in your world, so I know your world, I'll give you that. There's a lot of people who have lost their shirts on these big events, haven't they?
There are.
Yeah. So you're asking me to take my own money and put it into this gamble of a one-off event that if it rains, we've got a problem. If we don't sell the tickets, we've got a problem. All I'm trying to get to is I know what these events are like. It's what I call Murphy's Law. Anything that can go wrong will go wrong. And this is Mrs. Murphy's Law, which is my old man's an optimist.
That's lovely. And so that gives you a sense of Simon's business profile. Simon, how did you build the company? How did you get going? Because I've seen it said that you started the chain out of desperation or something.
Yeah, well,
I
left school with two O-levels, a good school, Marlborough College, an English public school, with two O-levels at the end of the 60s. And, I remember thinking, everybody said, find something that you really love. And I couldn't really think of anything to do with work that I really loved. So I ended up being a roadie going on the road with the bands in the 70s and the 80s, and that led to being a stage designer and Live Aid and then to television. And so I had a real roller coaster along the way. And I got to 1980, late 80s, and got divorced. And I remember getting divorced and being, pretty thrown to my knees, to tell you the truth. I found out around that time that they used to call me, my nickname was the Steamroller. So I steamrolled out through life, and I sort of thrown to my knees, and I did for the first time sort of have a bit of a look at myself, and I sort of realized that I remember thinking to myself, maybe some of my problems just might have something to do with me. And, it was through going through that process of looking at myself and figuring out what was standing in my way, because I wondered why I hadn't been more successful. I thought I had some of those attributes, and it was me that was getting in the way. And when I went through that, I realized my money was running out. And long story, but I started Yo Sushi, and it was a hit. I was very lucky. It was, I worked hard to make it so, but it was a hit.
But how did you come up with the idea of Yo Sushi?
New world.
Why Yo Sushi? What put that in your head?
Restaurants are a kind of easy way back in when you've slipped down the snakes and ladders board and you want to get a ladder and get back in quick. You open one, very, very high risk restaurants, but you open one and it's a hit and it can take large amounts of money very quickly. And that's what actually happened to me. I was going to open Yo Sushi at the end of the year, and the end of the year, my deal fell through, and I thought the whole thing was going to fall over. And in the second year, actually, all the things happened. We had conveyor belts and robots and talking this and all sorts of things happened in the second year. And when we opened the first 2 weeks, we were empty. And I thought, this is it. I'm going down with everything, all guns blazing, but everything gone. And the second Saturday, we had a queue down the block. And for the next 2 years, there was a queue. And the money was rolling in, and I was running the business, so the money was rolling right back out again, and that's where the problems all started, but it came good in time.
This was never predictable, really, in your life, was it, that you would be this successful in business?
Yeah, I think that I had a kind of you know, if I was always kind of creative, I was a stage set designer and I always had big ideas, and I suppose I never had the imagination educated out of me at school, and I always believed that anything was possible. So, you know, I think I had the kind of makings of it, but I think I was my own worst enemy. But, yeah, I think Yo Sushi working. I mean, there's lots of people start restaurants and everybody says they're going to be a chain, and you can count on the fingers of one hand the new chains that really that have happened on any big scale that's going to be sustainable over tens of years. So I think, you know, that was quite a big thing to happen. I was very lucky, and I got my timing was right, and it was interesting, and Sushi was right, and I got the right person in to run the business after 4 years, Robin Rowland, who runs it to this day. You know, I made the right choice.
Yeah.
And, you know, all the things fell into place. Richard Branson says that there were two or three times during the Virgin process where it could have all gone wrong and he could have lost the lot. And he wouldn't be the Richard Branson, the Virgin we know it today. And I think with Yo, you know, I mean, hopefully we're a pretender to that crown that we can, we're doing hotels and Yo homes and all sorts. So hopefully we'll be another Virgin in that sense.
But which means you really have to have some risk-taking abilities,
yeah,
don't you?
I
mean, are you naturally a risk-taker?
I think that I had to, over the Yo Sushi years, I probably had to roll a two or a three a couple of times on the dice. And once I had to roll a four, which is quite low odds, and I was lucky enough to roll them and carry on.
You mentioned you were a roadie in the past. You were actually a roadie for Rod Stewart, weren't you?
I was. It was one of my gigs.
Yeah. Was rubbing shoulders with people with a lot of wealth at a certain point in your life a prompt to you that you could have that kind of success?
I think I was a bit resentful about it at the time, because I'd been brought up in this sort of, we weren't a wealthy family ourselves. My dad was in the army, but this sort of, the bigger sort of family, some of them were really wealthy. And I remember as a kid thinking, you know, I want to be one of them. Why aren't we one of them? I think I was a slightly arrogant kid. In fact, the thing I always remember is that when I was a kid, I used to tell some people I was going to be a millionaire by the time I was 20. And then, of course, the 60s came along and I was doing love and peace signs and didn't have any time to do that. So I went through my 30s and I got to 40 and it was a tear your hair out moment. I thought, I'm going to run out of time. But yeah, I can't remember what the question was actually.
Well, it was just that the encounters you had with people,
yes, with
some wealth
and all that,
did seem to kind of spur you forward.
You know, the 60s were an amazing time, the 70s, because, you know, the background I came from, you're supposed to go into the army or be a stockbroker and do all of that business. We were supposed to be the rich ones. But then I ended up being the guy who carried the bags for the working class boys who'd made good and they were getting rich. So it was all turned on its head, which was what was amazing about the revolution of the 60s and the 70s. Brilliant thing, really. I love it.
You ended up in jail for a bit of time, didn't you, in your teens?
I did a short spell for drugs and I always thought that was the one story that I'd better get out in the open, you know, as I got to be better known. So when I did Edinburgh Festival, I did a one-man show at Edinburgh Festival called How I Got My Yo, and I started telling the story about, how I'd met Jeffrey Archer once. And I said to him, I said, you and me have got something in common. He said, what would that be? I said, well, I was in North Sea Camp, which was a detention centre in those days, which is where the open prison he went to. And you should have seen his face. He said he was silent, which is unlike him, for about half a minute. And then he said, not a lot of people say that to me at cocktail parties.
What about the depression, Simon? How did that impact upon your life?
Well, you know, it wasn't until recently that I really realised that I'd been depressed along the way. And I'm sure there's lots of people listening who've been down and had hard times. And I believe that one in five people in this country get depression of some sort. But I never thought that I was depressed. And when I look back now, I realised I was a lot of the time. Because, you know, depression isn't just about, you know, not being able to get out of bed in the morning and not to be able to do things, which I have been in that situation.
Really,
you know,
as serious as that, yeah.
Getting the simplest thing done just feels overwhelmingly difficult. And this is from a guy who's got, when I look back, who's done, I've done incredible things, you know, that most people couldn't do. But there's also been times when I couldn't get the simplest thing done, couldn't even clean up the kitchen. I was so down. So I didn't realize I was depressed at the time, but, you know, looking back, I was. And then that sort of knot in your stomach of anxiety, the sort of thought that something's going to go wrong, it's all going to come crashing down. You know, I carried that for many, many, many years. And even having money didn't take that away. You know, actually getting to be happy is, you know, they say that money doesn't buy you happiness. And at some level, that's not true. It buys you a lot of relief from unhappiness. But it also doesn't really make you happy. It's an inside job, you know.
What have you learned about yourself through wealth, through success, and through those experiences of depression?
I think, you know, you come down to, you know, I spent an awful lot of time wanting to be successful so I could have financial security, wanting to be successful to prove myself to other people, wanting to be successful so that people would be better friends with me. And what it's really come down to is it's great to work hard and have a purpose. Having a purpose, I think, makes you happy and is a fight against depression. I think that having a bit of money definitely helps if you can create some sort of financial security. My brother's father-in-law always used to say, he said, a really good way to get rich is not want too much. And even as I've had wealth, I've not gone crazy and spent money on this, that, and the other. And I find it quite ugly, that whole thing, you know. And what else have I learned about depression? That trying to be the person that you want to be, you know, to be, you know, there's always a thing in business, you know, can you be a nice person and be in business? And I would say I've been a nice person, and I've also been pretty tricky along the way, and I've been difficult and obstinate and not such a great person sometimes. So I've owned up to that side of my character, if you like, and hopefully now on a day-to-day basis I go around being as good a person as I can be. But, you know, we all fail. So I think that is a good way to get happy, really, is those bit of money and friendship. As I get older, friendship is everything. And, you know, I once thought to myself, if I put as much effort into good friendship as I've put into running my businesses and building brands, I'd have a lot of friends.
Yeah, well, that's the stuff you'd be thinking about in your
last
moments.
Yeah, that's what I think of. In the last 5-10 years, that's what I've done. I've got more friends today than I've ever had. And there was one time, I remember, soon after I got divorced, I remember being in a flat in London, being really down. And I've had this kind of front of having a great life. And in fact, I had a very lonely life. And I remember one time thinking, there is nobody I can call and talk to except my mum. And I didn't want to call her. And I think that was the low spot of the lot. So I've been up and I've been down. But they say to be a great blues singer, you have to have suffered the blues.
Well, I talked to a psychologist once about happiness, because you remember they had a lot of books out about the nature of happiness. And he said that the people who worry about whether they're happy tend not to be happy.
Yeah.
But the people who don't even ask that question, but their life is full of projects and ambition, the next thing that they want to achieve, the next thing that they want to do, and the people who value love and friendship and the project of a human relationship, they don't even need to ask what happiness is. They just live it.
Very good. I can hear you're good at it. I can hear it in your voice. Amazing what you can tell about people when you just meet them, isn't it?
Well, I just don't think on my deathbed I'm going to be looking back thinking to myself, I wish I'd made a couple more documentaries.
Yes.
You know, I think I'm going to be thinking of the people I love.
Yeah, exactly.
That's
and
what
to do
really
that,
about.
You know, that requires as much skill as starting and building a company. You know, the ability to really listen to people, you know, to go through your day instead of just thinking about yourself. And I think one of the things that I'm able to talk about this subject generally is that I have suffered a lot, because I think if you hadn't suffered a lot, you wouldn't understand it or have any interest in it. So I don't know about just looking positively the whole time. I think there's a bit of introspection is quite good. But as you say, yeah, I'm a project man. I love I have an idea and I do something about it immediately. You know, call me impulsive would be an understatement. You know, and that's where I've got through a lot.
Would you say you're driven?
Yeah, you could call it driven. I just, you know, instead of when I get an idea, instead of thinking about how many things can go wrong. In fact, I used to have a kind of rule that I'd say you're banned, Simon, from thinking about whether you're going to do this or whether you're not going to do it, and whether it's going to happen or whether it's not going to happen, and, you know, whether it's going to be successful or not. You just ban your brain from thinking about that. Every time you think about it, one, two, three, stop thinking, think about something else. And instead of go out and do the research and enjoy the process, that 2 years it took me to open Yo Sushi, I look back, and they were halcyon years for me, although I really enjoyed them, you know, and actually it was incredibly kind of vulnerable. I was putting everything I had in the world on the line. And, you know, but 90% of it, I believed it would happen.
If you don't take a risk, you don't get...
5% was sheer terror.
You don't get to live if you don't take a risk. Simon, thank you very much. Simon Woodruff.